For April the 1st, 2016, we talk about the Fallout 4 survival mode, Factorio, and we answer some community questions. Welcome to Level 144. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meissman.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, Duckspring happened, rather.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It did.
I've got to get the branding right. I'm still waiting for some final checks to clear, final straggler payments to come through. But we raised upwards of $1,600. Over the course of the weekend, which is great. Dennis, you participated.
I participated in that. I got on and streamed Hearthstone for a bit, but I think it's incredibly worth noting that this was pretty much soup to nuts, like a community thing.
Yeah,
We just have awesome people to the network.
Yeah, no, definitely. Sporky organized it, and they all stepped up to the plate. Like a huge number of people not only streamed but donated. Some of them streamed and donated. It was good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
so thank you guys. And if you're listening to this network, you are in the company of some really awesome people.
Yes. Yeah, we are incredibly hashtag blessed. If I just said blessed, which is actually what I mean, somebody would throw in a hashtag on top of it to make it to undercut the sentiment. But we are lucky.
just start from hashtag blessed.
Yeah,
hit with a hashtag in the face.
Yeah, somebody would swoop in and be like, "Ha ha! I made a joke on your heartfelt sentiment." But yeah, no, that was all over the course of this past weekend here. Anybody have any anecdotes? Stuff that went on since we last spoke.
I got to see some of Duckstream, and so I got to watch some of Faster Than Light at Saturday at 1 or 2 in the morning. So that was pretty cool. And just Duckspring in general was a lot of fun.
Yeah, had you played or seen any FTL to that? Okay.
Oh, you haven't played FTL at all?
Not yet. It's on my wish list.
Yeah, it seems like something you would enjoy.
I will get there eventually.
David, how about you?
Sure. I know last week a lot of it was for me was taking up with martial arts seminar testing, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Had an instructor come in from Ghana to visit.
Hmm.
Oh, so, nice.
So that was pretty cool. Went really well, actually. Things kind of came together a lot more than they normally do, so that was really cool.
Lots of hits, lots of striking, people
hurting. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and I mean, I didn't get seriously injured, so mm-hmm. that's always a plus.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, that is the requisite amount of banter stuff. Sorry, I'm gonna be moving us along here because we are on a tighter timeline
Change
than usual.
Places.
Yep. Yeah, we're on a tighter timeline than usual. It feels like that's happening a lot, but I haven't slept in days. So we've got the usual roundup of stuff here, with the exception of kind of a shorter free play esque multiplayer featuring some questions that were not addressed in the previous. Couple rounds here. Told you I was saving those for a purpose. But yeah, it is the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. David, I like this story that you brought up, so tell us about this.
Sure. So over the weekend, a web developer created published a game on Steam called Watch Paint Dry, which was a game where the sole verb available is to watch paint dry. It is literally just a wall that has presumably recently been painted.
Appears to be similar or in the vein of Bear Simulator or Goat Simulator. This is a wacky off-the-wall thing we can get $5 for.
I just want to know what monster would lean a ladder up against a wall that's just been painted. No wonder this got taken down. That's atrocious.
That's a permanent ladder. It's there for resale value.
It's a fixture. It's a statement. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
So this game got taken down fairly quickly because it turns out the game had never actually been approved by Steam. The developer had found out that after he'd gotten access to
Steam Workshop or something
like
that.
Yeah, Workspace, Workshop, yeah. He could then, when submitting a game, simply edit the underlying HTML of the submission in order to make it look like it had already been approved by a Valve employee.
Mm-hmm. Had something to do with like the trading cards, like that. That's how he got it through, was by adding trading cards and spoofing the ID to make it look like it had already been reviewed.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, and you know, sort of did this, I guess, kind of as a gray hat type hacking thing, to kind of prove that there is a vulnerability. I guess on the plus side, at least, no one intended to make a game this incredibly boring.
But he did it. He made it and he put it up and sold it. I don't know how much it cost, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Debbie, I'd be curious as to how many people actually bought it. And that would be interesting. Like, that falls under the like I'm making potato salad Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
It doesn't say in the article what Valve is going to do to the guy, which is my question. Like,
see, I don't know. I mean, I'd sort of be surprised if they did anything, just because it's, I know. I mean, he didn't really do anything.
And he could have been way more malicious, right? Like a lesser person could have put something really crass up, or what have you. So.
Right.
This seems to be good natured.
Mm-hmm.
And Valve in general, I think in the past has been pretty good about, not being unreasonable and interacting well with people and all that stuff. So I could see a world in which nothing happens as well. But at the same time, like, hey, you just muddled with our store in a way that could have been very nefarious, even though you didn't specifically make it that. Do we make it seem like that's okay for the next person? Who's the character in Super Troopers who just takes the joke to the worst place?
Farva.
Whatever the guy is, there's something that's funny and then he goes in and ruins it by taking it too far. So
yeah.
See, I feel like it's a general principle that if you're ever thinking of doing something in order to make an example, whatever you're doing is unjust.
I don't understand.
Like, if you're ever doing something because the next person might do something worse, then whatever you're thinking about doing is not right.
As opposed to just saying, like, hey, I did this. I didn't publish the game, but I totally could have. And then going to Valve, maybe that was the only way to get their attention.
I mean, what he says is that he's contacted them already.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I mean,
that was a point that I was going to bring up, as I had heard this and I wasn't sure if it was a rumor or not, that he had contacted Valve and mentioned this exploit and then gotten a response, and so did this.
Yeah.
Valve, which I would be okay with that situation.
Yeah, like if he had exhausted all other channels, like I disagree with you, David. Valve is a really strange company because like all of their movement recently, and by recently I mean like over the past 2 years, has been to be as hands off with the Steam store as possible, making it so that things can be fast tracked to be listed, and not really moderating stuff that goes on in the forums or the communities. It's kind of like they're trying to make it into a turnkey operation that it just kind of fundamentally can't be. And so, like, if they had ignored his attempts to bring this to their attention before, what else was he going to do?
Right.
You know, like, it, because if he hadn't told them about it, but he figured it out, somebody else probably would have, because people who want to do shitty things are really good at getting around security.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. Like this
like the government around iPhones.
Okay. I wasn't going to go with that joke, but okay.
Yeah. That's not over. We're gonna get another one. It's it was not just about that phone. Let's declare a moratorium on that.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. Let me see here. Maybe he didn't. I'm not seeing a price tag on this. So maybe he didn't take any money. So that thing that I said before is kind of off. Like it's just weird. Like just the things that Valve has done with Steam. If they feel, it feels like institutionalized negligence.
Yeah. Well, and at some point though, I don't know if it's speaking out of turn, but there's got to be so much going through that. You know, if you really wanted to give every single game the scrutiny that it deserved, you'd need to hire, you know, every other person on Earth or something like that. Like, I think there's got to be a point of diminishing returns in terms of scrutiny.
Yeah.
They're probably trying to find that line.
Yeah, I mean,
someone at Valve read the 4-hour work week, and now this is the result. Yeah.
Like the answer, the answer, and they took it literally. And the 4-hour work week is all about delegating, by which I mean shifting responsibility to somebody else. The answer is not to go Apple, where there are queues that take weeks and weeks to be cleared, where there's no kind of oversight into this. It's just, I don't know, like the fact that they have not a monopoly, but kind of a de facto domination of the market makes them a big target for this kind of stuff. Right. And just there does have to be some kind of happy medium. But yeah, I don't know.
At least, I mean, in terms of like just talking about their, games getting on Steam, what I don't exactly follow is, I guess the system keeps out like things that are blatantly exploitative most of the time. But I mean, like, it's definitely not keeping crap off of Steam.
No, no. I mean, like, and stuff that's crap should, you have people like what is it, that developer who was who's suing Jim Sterling for pointing out their shady practices. They're like spoofing like the names of like of other developers and stuff like that it's a two-person studio that cranks out four games a year that are all very, very poor quality, and they're suing Jim Sterling because of lost sales, because he has actually gone up and said like, yeah, this is a shitty thing that these people are doing.
Yeah, so I mean, like, ideally would at least get rid of that, but I mean, we've still got, you know, like 82 bazillion like survival clones, a crap ton of like creepy borderline porn, anime games, like in terms of like filtering for whatever you might want to filter, it doesn't seem like they're actually doing it.
I don't know. Like, it depends on what kind of marketplace they want to be, because there are people who are okay with buying those creepy anime games.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, not necessarily that any single one of those shouldn't be allowed, but I'm just saying, like, any of the things you conceivably might want to filter isn't being filtered.
Yeah.
Any given one should be.
Hmm. Yeah.
I feel like this might be a topic for another podcast, but I mean I kind of think that they shouldn't have any filter on a marketplace, but
yeah, I tend to agree, but I'm just saying, then why is there a filter at all if I don't know,
yeah,
if it's not going to filter the things you don't want in it.
I guess what I'm saying is they've got a filter, but it's not filtering anything, so why do they even have a filter?
Yeah, they're kind of half in, half out.
Right. Plausible deniability.
Yeah.
I guess maybe that's it.
Look, I mean, wherever you stand on this, we can all hold hands and take a stand against paint drying games. That just has no place in modern society.
But
I was just going to do a speed run of it this weekend.
What if it was on the DS where you had to blow into the microphone to make it dry faster?
Oh, that sounds like a great way to pass out.
WarioWare
game.
Well, then you just put it in front of your fan. Like, it's super easy.
Well, I mean,
like little keyboard cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
Just focused and, yeah.
Hacked.
Well, luckily for you, the paint drying game has now been removed from Steam, so the Stanley Parable is back to being the most pointless game on Steam.
Aww.
Sorry.
Looking for hot shots.
Having played it, I can actually disagree with you now. Finally.
Yeah, I.
Oh, gosh. So let's see here. I've got one. So a couple weeks ago, I think, some people on Reddit were poking around in patch notes or in some dummied out code in Fallout 4, and they discovered kind of the remnants or the seeds of a survival mode in there that was going to be added. And it turns out that as of right now, the survival mode is in beta on Steam. So people who've played New Vegas will remember that that game added kind of this extra level of difficulty that you could opt into where stim packs didn't heal you immediately. You had to eat, you had to rest, you had to drink. Medicines worked differently, things like that. Well, this kind of takes that and it makes it even more complicated. You have if you like ammo has a weight, if you walk around overburdened too much, your legs take extra damage. like resting or the kind of surface that you want to rest on will determine how much you can actually sleep like through the night to heal up. So like you'll get a less rest, you'll sleep for a shorter time in a sleeping bag as compared to like a bed. Yeah. And you can only save when you sleep. Yeah. So this thing is in beta and I'm really excited about that because it sounds like the way I want to play Fallout 4, to be honest. Go ahead.
Did you play survival mode in Fallout New Vegas?
Shit. Yeah.
All right.
Love cool. That. Yeah.
See, I wish they would have come out in New Vegas and would come out with this with kind of a survival mode sans bullshit. Because I feel like the reason I didn't play survival mode is like I love the idea of like actually having to drink and the actual survival things. On the other hand, the things where it's like bullets have weight, it's like, well, better spend 5 hours, clearing out my inventory, like
yeah, it's something else.
It just seemed like
manage.
A lot of it just seemed kind of like bullshit.
I mean, really, what it did was it made you be more mindful about what kind of guns you carried, that you didn't carry around like extra stuff, and actually, like it became a source of extra caps for me because I was more willing to sell off ammo I was never going to use because I decided I was going to be a gunslinger.
Sure, and to be fair, like I love that mechanic and like Stalker, but I feel like. I don't know. It seems like there's maybe better ways to do that.
But. Well, I mean, what you're asking for is the ability to tick like check boxes on and off, like to see which ones to determine which ones affect you.
Yeah, I mean that would be great.
Yeah, the only thing that like is non-ideal about that in New Vegas is the interface is not great. Like going in and managing stuff on the Pip-Boy is not a huge amount of fun, but like you eventually kind of get used to it and you learn to you learn to breathe that air, you know.
Yeah, you learn that vocabulary.
Yeah,
especially I feel like the some of those like the water stuff and some of those I feel like could almost be rolled into the main game.
It definitely feels like the way you were supposed to play New Vegas.
Right.
We're going to be doing New Vegas for WAF this year.
Nice.
Yeah. Have you guys done any of the other Fallout games?
We've done all of the other Fallout games.
Okay, I was going to say, I seem to remember listening to them. Did you do 1 and 2 together or did you do them separately?
No, we did 1 and 2 separately.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And then we did 3 this past winter, and we're going to be doing this one at a time I cannot announce, but it is not going to be this year's winter Western RPG.
Did you do like the weird like not strategy ones?
No, we haven't done that. Like the mainline ones, like Tactics, Fallout Tactics, maybe in our future. And what is it? Fallout Brotherhood of Steel might be on Abject Suffering.
Wait, yeah, was that the FPS or am I thinking of something else?
No, that was Fallout 3. Was the first person game. No, Brotherhood of Steel was the top down Baldur's Gate like game.
Okay.
Yep. So I'm excited about this. I'm going to wait and see how stable it is because I'd like to that would be the way I want to play Fallout 4. Seems pretty cool. I like the idea of like you need to track down clean water, otherwise you need to buy antibiotics. Like for some reason, like that gets me hard. It's pretty cool.
I wonder how they'll wrap it around like the forge mode that they have where you can like build houses in the sky.
I don't know.
Seems like they need to rectify that.
See, the one that always struck me as kind of dumb is, or weird, is the whole like you can sleep in a bed as long as no one owns it. So I could like blatantly like clear out one tiny area in the middle of like an enemy base and sleep on the bed there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and then it would still be considered a crime.
No, that one wouldn't be.
Oh yeah,
at least in 4.
I thought that I only know from 3 in New Vegas, but the ownership of beds, it is the only thing that is permanent in this world that is falling apart.
No, see in 4 it seems like the idea I got, I think that's still basically the same, except that in 4 it kind of defaults to unowned. So unless it's like actually in a house, no one owns it.
Okay.
So if it's just like in the middle of like some compound, it's generally not owned.
Yeah.
So murdering someone and sleeping in their bed, legal. Sleeping in a live person's bed, illegal.
Yep. Firing squad.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that it makes hotels really, really awkward.
Oh, it just they flip the bed up into the wall like in Nothing But Trouble. let's see here. Oh gosh, Dennis, what's the story you got here?
Yeah, so I mean, we had to know it was coming, but it seems to have been confirmed now that a sequel to Shadow of Mordor is in the works. Stunt actress Lauren Mary Kim listed it on her resume as doing stunt work for the game, or rather for a trailer for the game. And I think this is interesting. Just I thought it'd be good to open up discussion on where exactly do you go with this? Lord of the Rings is such kind of a fixed arc that I'm not sure how they create space for themselves to continue on with the story. So Ben, I know you've played it. Did they kind of set up a sequel in the first game, or like where could they go with this?
I was gonna say,
have to retread with a new character?
Two problems. I don't know anything about the Lord of the Rings lore, so I don't know if it's boxed in or not. And then the other problem is I completely forget like where they left off. I remember like a few twists in the story, but mostly I just remember like killing orcs and then touching them on their heads with my hand.
So. Cressing them.
Well, they paint
just a lot of that.
Someone having very unique powers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like he isn't a type of, he's not like, hey, there's a whole order of these guys. It's like a very specific situation that has him given his powers.
Yeah.
Are you talking about in the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's true.
So it seems like unless they did not resolve that in any way in the first game, it'll be interesting to see how they wrap themselves around having a sequel.
Back to Silmarillion.
This is so, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Shadow of Mordor takes place so far in advance of The Hobbit and in the trilogy of Lord of the Rings that like you could easily do an interquel between this, because like,
oh really, is it way earlier?
It's like around the time of the forging of the rings.
I think no, the first one takes place like at least after The Hobbit. Because Gollum is a major and incredibly annoying character.
Oh, in Shadow of Mordor?
Yeah.
Huh.
I had no idea. I thought that...
Yeah,
spoiler.
I think kind of like, in terms of narrative, like overall role in the story, kind of their conceit is that you're off just kind of keeping things from like coming to a head. You know, jacking with... Sauron's army enough that like that nothing bad happens until the actual main characters complete their quest effectively.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how they kind of found room to, you know, have you be doing something without, you know, screwing up, like you said, the fact that there's a very established story.
Yeah. You know, the reason why I got confused, I think the spirit that your main character is like bonded with is the spirit of one of the original forgers.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay. There we go. That's that is to explain my confusion. Doesn't make me look any smarter, but at least it makes me not look like an asshole.
It's well articulated stupidity.
Yeah. Don't worry. I will, what's the opposite of redeem?
I put that on my business card.
I will condemn.
I don't think they're going to replace SAT questions with Lord of the Ring knowledge at any point in the future. So I think you're safe, Cole.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
No, also, I don't think you'll ever take the SAT again.
That's true, too.
I was thinking about that like earlier this week. I was like, you know what? I could have gotten those extra 3 points on my ACT. Like, I could have rocked it. Like, can I go back and just do it again?
I want to Philly Madison this situation.
Yes. Show up in a propeller beanie like, hey dudes, I'm here to take the high school test.
No, you can totally do that, but when adults do it, it's called the GRE and it's twice as pointless.
Oh well, and I've gotten so much dumber since then too. Thanks fair alcohol enough.
So, it'll be interesting to see what comes of this. The arc for video games seems to be that the second game is almost always an improvement over the first.
Yeah.
Just kind of they've got a base to work from. They've got, you know, a hands-on view of what systems worked and didn't. And generally the second game is a large quality jump over the first. So
Is this an Ubisoft game?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. The third will disappoint.
Yeah, the third will be the game that can't meet anybody's expectations.
Yeah.
I've said it on every other show. The backlash to Dark Souls 3 is going to make Dark Souls 2 backlash look like a walk in the park.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
I feel like that's especially true with movies too. Like, can you name a good third movie in a trilogy?
Return of the King.
I like Fellowship better, but that's not a bad one, I suppose.
It's better than Two Towers or whatever. I about said Twin Towers, that'd be different.
Have the same arc as well, so.
Yeah.
So especially because this game had such a unique kind of mechanic in the whole, you know, army, and I forget what they called it, but where every kind of bad guy remembered who you were and
the nemesis.
Nemesis system.
Yeah.
Since that was kind of so new, it'll be interesting to see what happens when they have the chance to refine it.
I'm going to be really curious, exactly, like to see how much more different kind of game they're going to be able to put around it, and the fact that it's been, what, 2-3 years since it came out.
That long? Wow.
I think so. I think it was like fall of 2014, maybe.
I don't think it's been quite that.
It was one of the first games I got for the PS4.
Yeah, I mean, and that came out like in
September 2014. So
yeah,
good long while.
So I mean, like a year and a half. I was off by a handful. Ben, how about you? You got a story?
Yeah, I just got a small little ditty. It's about a new app that came out for the Oculus. It's basically the program that was used in Heavy Rain coming to real life. So it's called Virtual Desktop, and the idea of what it is you use the Oculus instead of looking at your computer screen. That's so last year. But you can scale your desktop screen. You can move it around. But in the background, it'll be like a virtual environment. And so it's kind of like similar to what your wallpaper would be, where it can like go through different, it can cycle through different environments. One interesting effect of it is like if you're watching a movie, it can put you in a movie theater environment. So you can watch that.
That thing we joked about several times.
It's, I don't know, it looks pretty cool. I mean, it basically looks like a realization of Heavy Rain.
Naaman Jaden's glasses.
Yeah. Thanks for pulling that name out. I could not remember that one.
So this is more or less like the inverse of augmented reality, I guess.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, augmented reality is, you know, like real life and, you know, we're going to put, you know, some interface on it, whereas this is like, you know, some fake interface, whereas this is going to, you know, we're going to put your interface from real life into a fake world.
Yeah. It is giving you a fake screen inside of a fake world. Which is why your initial comparison to I forget what his system in Heavy Rain was called, but
is it Ari?
Yeah, yeah. Like yeah. The initial comparison to Ari was a little bit. It threw me off the scent because, like, that very much was like the world was transforming around him. Like mm-hmm. his hotel room became like an autumnal forest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This I'm looking at a video of it. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here I am on the rings of Saturn configuring my virtual desktop.
Well, it's just anticlimactic.
Yep. No, look back at Saturn, you idiot.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, one interesting thing they did. So this is one of the new things that's coming out with Oculus is having I don't know if it's called like 360 video, but basically like you have a camera that captures every direction. Mm. And so like somebody can act out a scene. And then when you go and watch it, you can look in any direction, yeah. which is kind of cool.
It's kind of like someone. Those QuickTime 3D videos that they turned into Myst 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. See, I wonder though, doesn't that kind of undo all of the, you know, work that generally goes into like establishing scenes and stuff like that in movies?
What do you mean?
Like frame composition and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I just think it makes it into a different medium. So, I mean, you can still have composition when you have that shot. It's just harder because you have to account that the person can look in any direction.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I guess that's basically what, like, theater was for a crap ton long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. Like, so this is pretty cool. Like, I'm looking at this. Initially, I was kind of scoffing. But the idea of this, like, you know, existing in this 360 photograph, which I'm sure eventually will give way to, like, fully 3D worlds and stuff. Like, I want to be in Tron doing my shit. Like, I want to see, like, light cycles and stuff.
Down to my folder for that.
What this makes me think of is, like, taking my living room back and also my office and just like having my entire entertainment set up because I'm a lonely boy be just a chair and one of these. Like you don't need a television, you don't need a sound system, like you don't need a computer monitor or anything else. You're just sitting there doing your shit. Although typing with this might be weird. I don't look down when I type, but some people do.
Well, mm-hmm. yeah, but those people are wrong.
I understand that they are, but it is it is a factor of like usability and also like reaching and looking for stuff. Huh.
I wonder if we're going to see. I don't know if they have cameras on this at all or not, but I wonder if we're going to see pretty soon some actual, like, I don't know, pseudo augmented reality or something, you know, something where, you know,
I mean,
some ability to actually incorporate actual objects into what you're seeing on the screen.
That's what the Vive is, and that's that is explicitly the tack that Microsoft is taking with HoloLens. Like those are more in line with AR than VR.
See, I almost feel like ultimately, there's going to have to be at least some of that in VR just for reasons like that.
Yeah. Well, we've been on the brief for a little while. Do we? Oh, there's Rick and Morty. Do we have any more? Do we have any more stuff to hit about this, or do we want to move on?
There we go.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we're going to do something a little new. This is going to be a free play, but I'm going to do, let's do four questions, and then let's get on to talking about some games. All right. So let us see here.
And these are overflow from previous free play segments.
Yes. So let's see here. Graham writes in asking, what is the video game with the funniest writing? So games with laugh 'em ups.
I really liked Eat Lead, The Return of Matt Hazard.
Oh wow,
that is great.
It's got Will Arnett voicing it, so he could say pretty much anything. It would be funny. But I remember the writing in the game being pretty snappy. Two things stick out in my mind. The first one was a boss fight versus a JRPG character, and he goes off on him for using ellipses. Just, what is this? that? What is, you know, what's going on? Why even have this? And that was really funny. And the second was, there was apparently, I never played it, but like a kind of little side game that was available on the PlayStation Store.
It was like a side scroller kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And its title was Matt Hazard Bloodbath and Beyond.
Yeah, yeah.
That little one-liner has stuck with me, and I think of it every now and again and giggle.
Yeah, it does a really good job of kind of being the irreverent, you know, kind of humor, you know, tough guy slash, you know, making fun of all these genres without being crass.
It's like it is like a self-aware and not completely morally repugnant Duke Nukem Forever.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think
basically what it's trying to be.
Right.
Yeah. They do a good job of kind of like skewering video games without being like video game stuff, right?
See, I think that may be kind of just a matter of everybody has a different tolerance for it, because most of the stuff that I've read about it and like videos that I've watched have made it seem like there was too much of that in there for me.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I remember it fondly, obviously.
Yeah. I have a boring answer, but it is top of mind because I just recently played it. Portal 2.
Yeah, you swoop mine.
Yeah, so we can tag team this one. Like Stephen Merchant's performance in that. Is that who that is?
Yeah.
Playing Wheatley. His performance in that is so fucking good. And like GLaDOS
J.K. Simmons is as well.
J.K. Simmons, yeah. Like they're so cannily written, and like this is, you know, stuff I've heard, you know, at least two times before, right? And I'm still laughing at like not only the world that they've built, but just kind of like the quickness with the way that it's kind of delivered and acted and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, how about you? Was Matt Hazard yours?
No, this is one of them that I know I'm going to like, you know, being lying awake tomorrow morning and you know, come up with something, but I guess I'd have to go with, I really enjoyed the writing in Magi Nation.
Okay. That is the Game Boy Color trading game RPG.
Right. Unfortunately, honestly, it's been so long ago that I'm not sure I could even give any good examples. It's just really kind of silly, and I know, just kind of did it for me.
Yeah. Let's see here. OMG Amoose writes, if you could stop any one gaming related thing coming soon, say within a year or two, which would you choose and why? This is a tough one because like I don't want to be the person who says I want to stop VR. Right? Like, even though I am pretty disinterested in it. Like just as a thing until I play something that kind of proves, you know, like is the proof of the concept for it. Like, yeah. I don't want to like cut this off at the knees before it can actually like do something really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like I can't be contrarian in that way.
I'm trying to think of what series is like good but on the verge of being driven into the ground.
Whew, that is like a rare breed indeed.
Yeah, Ubisoft. Yeah, series is Ubisoft.
Yeah, but what's on the verge of being serialized in a really bad way? Like
possibly Uncharted 4, depending upon which way it goes. I'm optimistic about it, but
yeah, that could be one. Or maybe I'm thinking Assassin's Creed just took a break, right? Like after 3,
the Victorian one, yeah.
And it, like they did a lot of stuff really well after taking a break and coming back to it, which is good, but it was kind of too late for that series.
Yeah. You know what? Here's what I'm going to say for mine. Whatever Nintendo's doing next. I really just want, like, I don't trust them to do anything that is not like a machine that is designed explicitly for games. And making cool games for it. Like, I know that has not worked out too great for them, but like if they could give me like the modern version of the GameCube, like,
yeah,
I would very much desperately want that, please.
Yeah, I mean, I them going back to actually just making games would be pretty awesome.
And like, they've made fantastic games. I love my Wii U. It's just it sucks because their track record has not led me to believe that they can do anything with online services whatsoever. And if the NX is leaning on that, and there is no just like strong, this is a console. There are many like it, but this one is made by Nintendo, and it plays really cool games made by Nintendo. It's going to be very disappointing. Like, if we thought the Wii U was too weird for people to relate to, I think the way the rumors are pointing, like, that way madness lies.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Can I stop Sony from shutting down production of Vita games?
Yes, yes.
Let's push the death of the Vita off by a year.
Yeah, let's stop a stop.
If we can stop a stop, then I would stop the stop production of Silent Hills.
Yep. Ah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. That in all honesty should have been mine. Like, and you know, if I'm being frank, like, bring Konami back, please. Stop Konami from doing what they're doing.
So yeah, I think for me, I don't know, I feel like all of mine are probably way past the point of like stopping things before they go wrong. I feel like free to play slash, you know, all of the like free to play slash,
sure.
I'd say maybe more controversially, roguelikes.
You want to stop those?
Yeah, I want to stop games being roguelikes without a extremely good reason, by which I mean like were designed as a roguelike.
So stop games from appropriating roguelike elements. I know appropriating is a fraught term, but
yes it is.
But it'll just come back with better skills.
But it's gonna have to restart from stretch, so it'll be from scratch, so it'll be a while.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the vast majority of the time it doesn't add any of the games anything to a game other than, you know, I'm just going to stop there. I think the vast majority of the time it doesn't add anything to the games it's in.
Let's see. It seems like we all answered that one. Mike writes in, what is your favorite flawed game? For example, No More Heroes has a litany of problems, both functionally and conceptually, but I have affection for both games in the series in spite of that. I'm going to be uncreative and piggyback on top of that one. Not to say No More Heroes, because I have no particular affection for that game, but Killer 7, it is a game that I would that I like but couldn't recommend because of its just very off-putting aesthetic and control scheme. However, like, it is in that thing that like I love to death but can't defend, strictly because it is style over substance in a huge big bad way.
So I think I have a similar rationale with mine. Urban Chaos, the first game by Rocksteady, is something that I love a whole bunch, but like it's not like a great game. It's just a really fun game. So
And this isn't revisionist. Like, you were way into that back in the day too. Like, you weren't coming to Rocksteady from Arkham Asylum.
I do believe that I played it and enjoyed it before they came out with Arkham Asylum. So hipster cred.
Whoop. Dennis, how about you?
I'm struggling to have something come to mind, like a flawed gem, and I'm just drawing a blank. So come back to me after David, and we'll see if I can farm up anything.
I'll throw in another one: the Warriors game by.
Rockstar?
Hasn't that one kind of since become cult classic?
It's a really good brawler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. it seems like I've seen it on like a couple lists of like, you know, like great games you probably haven't played but should, or you know, whatever BuzzFeed decides to worth that.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a PS2 brawler that is really fun.
Yeah, you can like play and beat it in like 8 hours at most. Mm-hmm. So
David, how about you?
Sure. Well first I want to give a shout out to Stalker that probably qualifies, but I think the big one for me would be the Army of Two series. I realize we say that like every time that this sort of question comes up, but it's probably the most accurate for this sort of situation.
Actually, yeah. I have to concur with that as the person who usually co-ops with you through the Army of Two Games.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there. I don't know. Like, the gameplay, I think, is mostly solid. You know, maybe a little bit. You know, a little bit samey, a little bit derivative.
Stop and pop cover shooter, like, just according to Hoyle. Yeah.
Although it does have like a kind of a neo MMO style aggro system where, you know, basically enemies will, you know, focus on whoever's being most aggressive, and you can build your gun to, you know, either, you know, put on silencers to draw less aggro, or, you know, have it the other way around to draw more.
That seems like something Borderlands would have done, actually. Like, yeah, did they have something like that in there, too?
I don't think they do, actually.
Oh, weird.
I think the AI, you know, is in general, you know, if you're, you know, hiding behind cover, the AI is probably going to ignore you a bit more. But, like, in this, it was to the point where, like, if one person drew, you know, 100% aggro, the other person could, like, drop a special ability and straight up go invisible or something. But really good weapon customization. You know, it had some really good features. Its big downfall was the just horrible moral choices and just like incredibly I get kind of crass writing.
Yeah, just like morally repugnant shit.
Yeah, I know I've said this before, but it very much seemed like it never struck me. I think a lot of people would disagree as just being like straight up, like just awful, so much as it seemed as like the writers never like stopped to consider the consequences of the things they were writing.
Yeah.
Well, particularly the consequences if you didn't take the obvious good choice.
Right. Yeah.
Huh. We have one final question here. Oh wait, Dennis, did you think of one?
I'm piggyback Army of Two.
Okay, cool. Piggyback. There we go. Mm-hmm. I was too busy deciding which question I was going to do next.
Sister band of Nickelback.
Yeah. What?
Nothing. What?
Oh, piggyback. There. You thought that was going to get by, but that's now on the list. Let's see here. What is your favorite game to take screenshots in? This is from Sam.
Bloodborne.
Ooh.
Yeah, Bloodborne, specifically because they make it so easy.
Yeah.
To put a little bit of English on this, during my time with Minecraft, I really enjoyed taking shots of my creations, and also just like the weird like biomes that I would find. Like, there are some pretty good vistas in that. Like, you know, just as you are exploring the wild frontier.
I have to go with Sir, You Are Being Hunted. Just because that has some real... for not being like a hyper realistically designed game, it just has some really pretty and atmospheric stuff that gets randomly generated.
Yeah.
And just everything in that game has so much character to it, that even though it's kind of randomly jumbled together, it kind of comes together as a really good whole.
Yeah. Have you read any of the developer diaries on like their world generation system?
No.
It's pretty crazy just like how much effort they put into like having random trash and like alongside the roads in their like north of northern England generator.
There needs to be 1% more trash on the roads.
It must be at least one discarded bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I took screenshots on Sir, You Are Being Hunted, it would just be lots of incomprehensible pictures of very low res grass textures.
Yeah, well, that is the majority of the game. But if you ever are brave enough to actually pop your head up,
nah, I'm not.
then it gets pretty. But that's almost a certain way to invite death. So stay in the grass.
Yeah. And Ben, how about you?
Similar answer. I don't think I take many screenshots, so I don't really have a good answer. Maybe like a Mr. Riven game would be cool for its time and place. But I thought about the question, do you think Aborigines have problems with screenshots if you're taking screenshots?
Wait,
this game has no soul. Somebody took a screenshot. I hope I didn't help us out ping pong. I don't know. Yeah. So yeah, thank you everybody. I don't know how to suggest that you write this stuff in, honestly. Like, just look for the next time we have a free play. We still have a couple in case this happens. And also let me know what you think of this kind of random random listener write-in kind of stuff. This feels a little bit like what most podcasts do. Doing a little experiment.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. Since everybody was here last time, nobody can take precedence, so I will jump in with mine, which is very brief, very small. I was away from the house for a while for family stuff. It was Easter weekend. So I did not have much time to play anything, but I did play a little bit of Factorio earlier today. This is not infringing on my patent for Oreo cookies that have different bits of trivia inscribed into them, but rather a top-down kind of like 2D survival game that is... No, it's much more than that. I fucked it up, guys. I did it wrong. I said it bad. It's not a survival game. It presents itself as that because you are crash landed on a planet and like you can break down some trees and make a hammer. But really what this game is about is finding these nodes of resources, and like the game implies, or the name implies, building a factory and automating their harvesting. So like you only do like a little bit hand by hand, you know, like just like by hand at the start. You do just enough to build like an auto miner that you place over top of a resource node, and then you use some of the resources from that in order to build some like conveyor belts and automated arms that move stuff around and put together systems where like the output of a miner goes on a conveyor belt over to like the smelter, where you can harvest that or put it into a fabricator, which will build a dingus that can then be, you know, brought over here for you to pick up and then put somewhere else. And
I can't believe your game is using miners to do your work.
Yeah.
So what's the end game of this? Are you trying to like build a ship to get off the planet, or are you just trying to enslave the planet or like become a giant corporation?
I think so. I think, you know, it's just you, and like I admittedly, so I can only give a very shallow analysis of this. But like it's just you on this planet. Like there's nobody to enslave. Like there's kind of a misguided combat system in it, where like you can find guns on crashed crafts and things like that, and just after a while, like bugs will come and attack you. But like that takes me out of the flow of like planning where my conveyor belts are going to go.
So what I understood is that your factories like put off pollution. And if the pollution reaches certain like alien homes or hives, they'll come after you for it.
Maybe.
So I don't know if it's possible for you to plan your factory placements to avoid dumping pollution in the wrong place, or if it's just the nature of getting bigger. And it's like, okay, eventually you're going to get these waves thrown at you. But
yeah,
so that's the underlying
eventually
system.
You get a Godzilla.
And we all learned a lesson. Maybe there's a little Godzilla in all of us. no, it's like, so admittedly, like I haven't played very much of this. Most of what I've heard about it is from the recent Idle Thumbs episode, where they talked about it, like, and they talked about the bugs being a function of pollution. But it seemed less about planning where your factory was going to be and more about just like providing a countermeasure for, you know, just when you have anything that's automated, eventually just the power curve gets kind of crazy. Like, oh, all of a sudden I have more stuff than I know what to do with, like giving you something else to deal with. Whereas you progress, there are these threats that you have to handle as you are progressing, Ben, to create this research material in order to build a craft to get off of this planet.
Okay.
Yeah. What's kind of like what opened this up for me is the idea that like, not only are you, you know, automating these processes that you otherwise would have had to do manually using just these little widgets and doodads, but materials can get backed up in the system. So, you know, you have an auto driller that is bringing up a bunch of coal, and then you're feeding that over to like a smelter, and you're feeding a bunch of ore back into that smelter. Like, hey, you figure I've got both of these going in. Well, actually, no, the smelter can only go so fast. And if all of these conveyor belts get backed up, not only are you not feeding more stuff into it, but also you're not binding it. So like you immediately have this big backup in your system. And I was like, oh wow, because if I was operating at any scale higher than this, one of these mistakes would totally fuck up the rhythm of everything else.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. I kind of wish the graphics were bigger. It's a little bit too small and fiddly and dark. Like, it's a little bit hard to like take a look at what's happening. Like, I look at the way this game is presented, it reminds me of Tibia, that old free MMO. Yeah. Like, you know, it's this top down thing, and I understand that they only have, you know, it just the kind of game that it is, like tile based, you can only have so much fidelity on it, but like I wish it was a little bit easier to like scan the screen and see what it is, because like I want to get to the point where I just see the wireframe very quickly with this, and the way it's presented kind of puts a barrier between me and that.
What are you playing it on?
It is a Mac and PC game.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's early release, but it's in development for like 4 years. It seems pretty feature complete, but like it is very much in the vein of like a Minecraft or a Terraria, except with, again, this heavy automation kind of thing. And when I left off, like, again, I'm super early, so I'm sorry if this is really shallow. Like, when I left off, it was introducing like electric power, you know, building building what you needed in order to like power more plants and fabricators and things like that.
So it has a similar arc to the board game Power Grid?
Maybe. I'll take your word if it matches what I described. Mm. Yeah.
I will take credit for that analogy.
No, he can have it. I don't want to say yes or no if it's going to be wrong. Oh, man. So that's all that I've been playing. Who wants to go next?
I'd like to go next.
Ben picked up with that. So go ahead, Ben.
I'll go super quick. Mine's Stardew Valley, and the reason why I wanted to go next is because it's a kind of a similar theme as Factorio, where you're kind of automating systems, but the context is farming instead of crash landing on an alien planet. So I've put a bunch of time into that. I don't know if I like the game or not. I have like kind of a love-hate relationship with it. Especially coming off of The Witness, like thinking about how you interact with this game. It's very much like a dopamine drip machine, you know, where, you know, like you're interacting with the world by clicking your mouse repeatedly and doing these really like mundane, low level thinking tasks. And the idea is you do those long enough and you click fewer times, you know? So that aspect of it, while it's addicting, I don't know if there's a good value to that. I think one of the other reasons why people really like this game or will play it is they really like the atmosphere of the game and kind of the meditative effect that the game has, where like the farming you can kind of get in a trance or zone out while you do these tasks. And so there might be possible value to that. I don't know if I'm completely buying into that. I wish there was a stronger narrative to the story. But I don't think it's that type of game. It's just kind of you passively go through the seasons, and there's like events that happen like throughout the year. I don't know. Do you guys have any questions about that?
No. Like, I had a choice between playing either Stardew Valley or playing Factorio, and it just Factorio kind of felt like a throwaway. I knew that they would satisfy the same kind of optimization itch for me, but like Factorio seemed like a thing that I could fit in, whereas like Stardew Valley, like I want to sit down and really like pay more mind to it. So it sounds like it's like unsatisfying specifically because it is a little bit shallow for you.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'm looking at my Steam account now. I've played it for 16 hours, so like I've put a good amount of time into it, but just in talking about Factorio, like that game sounds interesting to me just because it sounds like there's more higher level thinking going into it when you're problem solving, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. And for me, like, Stardew Valley seems more attractive just because I know it's a hole I'm not going to fall down.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, the Harvest Moon type games always struck me as kind of the, like, 15 minutes, half hour a day type of games, you know, meant to be like long, slow burn. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's just kind of my approach.
Stardew Valley is such a pretty game, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love them pixels. Did you have anything else, Ben?
That's all.
Okay. David, how about you?
Sure. Well, I've still been playing The Division, and it's still pretty good, but I'm kind of going to skip over that just because, you know, more interesting things. I picked up Salt and Sanctuary.
Oh, neat.
Nice.
So, I don't know yet. I've sort of been bouncing off of it a little bit. I've had a really hard time, figuring out kind of its character build system.
Right.
In particular, like, it seems like it's a game you definitely have to make a decision about what weapons you're going to use. But all of the weapons seem very samey to me.
What are the different weapons?
Well, it's like swords versus dagger versus axe versus whip. Those are kind of, I think, the main ones you have at the outset.
Yeah, but they're like pole arms, there are spears, and just a bunch of stuff. Like, the biggest difference between the different weapons is reach, attack time, and then the way that the strong and weak attacks and the charge attacks articulate.
Sure, but from what I've seen, like, the vast majority of them seem to use the exact same movesets. Maybe that's just me, but it seems
what would
like...
What would you like to see them do with 2D combat?
Oh, not so much that there's anything wrong with that from a gameplay standpoint. I more mean like playing Dark Souls, it was pretty clear early on, like, I like this moveset or I don't. Whereas with this one, I'm having more trouble predicting, like, how does what I'm playing right now foreshadow, like, what this will be in the end game?
Yeah. I don't know enough about it to even say if there's, like, a respec option.
There is a limited respec. You can get basically, like, anti-levels, effectively, that let you undo one spending into the skill tree.
Yeah.
And apparently one of the quirks of the system is you can spend them anywhere in the skill tree. So you could, like, build up down the skill tree, get the final ability, and then respec out of everything except the final ability.
Oh, wow. Do you get all the gems back from the branch you cut off?
Yep.
Huh, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're giving yourself, like, a temporary crippling over specialization in exchange for, like, the ability to get something crazy and reinvest everything, huh?
Right. Although, from what I've seen, it looks like that you can respec, like, roughly 20 gems over the course of the game.
Yeah.
The other
Which
thing
seems,
is, like,
seems plenty.
Yeah. It well, and also the level cap is, like, 500, and there's no multiplayer, so
I mean, there's like invasions and stuff like that, right? Invasions and co-op.
There's couch co-op, but there's no, like, actual, like, invasions or, like, nothing where player level would be a barrier. So there's nothing just keeping you from just grinding until you've got everything,
right?
But yeah, the big thing, the big thing is, I assume you've played it some, right?
Yeah, I've played like the first level. I've gotten up to like the first boss, up through the first boss.
Okay, I've gotten to the first boss and, like, got it down to like a fifth of health before I died. So, what do you think of the feel of shields?
It's cool. I like how quick they are to get up. It works like Dark Souls does. They soak stamina.
Okay, because, like, my feeling, the absence of like 100% physical shields really threw me.
I mean, that was a thing in Dark Souls 2, too.
Like, well, but you started the game with a 100% shield.
Not in 2.
Oh, well, I never played 2. I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. In 1, at least.
Yeah, like depending on your class. Okay. Like 100% shields were definitely more common in 1, but yeah, like in 2 you had to go a ways and you had to be specced for a certain way. Like 100% physical block shields are not a good thing. Like they really encourage, they really make it so that only the sword and board style of play is viable, or they make it overly viable to where most people don't get out from behind their shield.
I know. I mean, that was really what I liked about Dark Souls, because, you know, it was a unique play style. But, I mean, that's a whole other thing. Regardless, the way shields are set up in this, I don't see myself ever using them.
Right.
So yeah, I've kind of been figuring out, like, is this just straight up a Castlevania game? Or, yeah, so... Yeah. But, I mean, it's a, you know... I say that, it sounds much more negative. I really like the actual setup of the game so far, the actual playing of it, I've mm-hmm. really enjoyed so far.
Yeah.
I love the fact that, you know, I don't know how big their skill tree is, but, you know, at least maybe hundreds of nodes, I don't know, something. I don't know.
It's pretty daunting, when you scroll around it.
And every single node has flavor text.
Yeah.
So like wow. all 20 nodes that give you +1 to dexterity have a different passage from one of the religion scriptures. Mm-hmm. Say.
Yeah. I spent some time. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I really like the factions. They strike me as a little bit more believable than Dark Souls factions, or that's not exactly right, but you know what I mean.
No, I don't actually.
I know, like Dark Souls factions just kind of struck me as very like, you basically have like the paladins, the clerics, and then like blah blah, I'm evil, fear me, number 1 through 3. And the Sun Bros. Like I know
they all have a place in the world.
Maybe.
Yeah, they definitely do, at least in the lore, and they give you different like multiplayer options for co-op and, you know, PvP kind of stuff. Like it's definitely like it definitely functions. They fit into a place, if not like directly into like a particular character build.
Yeah, I guess maybe more what I'm saying is I'm not saying they necessarily didn't have like backstory, but I feel like the factions in you know Salt and Sanctuary explicitly are different religions, and they all seem kind of believable to me as like all being kind of broad approaches to religion that like I could see this as like this being a world where these are kind of the you know religions that have kind of solidified as the world's dominant religions, if that makes sense.
I mean, it just depends on what you're looking for in these, because the fact like the covenants in 1 specifically, like you are pledging your service to like one of the major lords or like a subsect of their broader religion. Like they definitely make sense in the fiction.
They
don't have like analogs to the to a real world religion, but like they're definitely like justified both from a play and fiction standpoint.
Yeah, I guess maybe that depends on what you mean by makes sense.
I don't know if we can. I don't know if there can be two different versions of that.
I would say I'm not sure they do make sense. They just seem. I know that's. It's either there. Regardless, I like the approach in Saw and Sanctuary a lot better.
Hmm. Yeah, so somebody fired off a coal in the middle of that.
Oh, I was just going to make a joke and say, are you sure you know what you're talking about with Dark Souls?
Yeah. We're just about out of time for that. I want to make sure we have time for Dennis to say his stuff. Anybody have any other questions about Salt and Sanctuary? All right. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've just got one new game that I played, which is The Last Guy by SCE Japan.
That is a that is a PSN game, right?
PSN Plus. Game. It is both. And it's a like a top-down arcade style game. Think of it as the next evolution of the Snake game that you played on your phone, where instead of trying to avoid your own tail as you get longer and longer, you're trying to avoid miscellaneous items on the map. And kind of get your tail as you grow it back to a home base to cash it in. So the kind of story that this is set in is that there's been a zombie outbreak. A death ray of some sort has hit Earth, and everyone outside was turned into a zombie, and everyone inside is kind of trapped in the buildings and needs someone to rescue them. And you are deemed the chosen one, which mainly means you have a red cape. And you go into all these different cities and run through the cities, and you know, as you get close to buildings that people are in, they'll come out and join you until you have this crowd kind of trailing along behind you. And zombies, you know, if you get too close to them, will kind of see you and chase you. And so it's all about collecting as many people as possible and then getting them back to the escape zone without attracting the attention of the zombies. Or if you do, doing it in such a way that you know you can get, you know, the extent of your tail out of the way before they can get to you.
So it's basically if people were herding animals.
Yeah, basically.
They can't eat all of us.
No, not herding animals, the like lemmings, following animals.
Okay, so I was initially confused because, like, in Snake, like, the tail only goes where you have been. So, like, if you avoided a stationary thing once, then it's always avoided.
Right, but the all the zombies move, right?
Okay, yeah.
So if they see any part of the tail, they'll start chasing towards it.
Yeah.
And you have a couple mechanics that allow you to kind of manipulate that. You can either dash yourself, which makes you move faster, which by virtue makes the rest of your tail move faster. Or you can hold circle so that you stay in place, but the tail kind of like groups up on you.
Okay.
And people will form more of a clump. And then if you dash away from a zombie and hold circle, it kind of moves the back end of the tail really fast. And then there's kind of some, you know, once your tail starts getting longer, if you encircle a building, so you actually do want to touch your tail in this version of the game, if you can draw a circle around the building and touch the tail of people, it will automatically add everyone in the building to your tail. So whereas if you're too short to circle the building, or if you're just standing near it, they'll kind of slowly drain out of the building. Which is okay, but that, you know, if there's 50 people in the building, you kind of have to stand in place for a while for them to trickle out.
Mm-hmm.
So the kind of strategy in the game is, how do you get your tail long enough to where you can start circling buildings and adding to it quickly while still not having it get out of hand long, where you're not going to be able to get it out of the way of zombies.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's really fun. It scratches that kind of quick arcade fix itch. You get a score at the end of the game, every round. A round lasts about like 8 minutes or so, and you're just collecting as many people as you can within the time limit. The interesting thing, and I think the thing that holds it back a little bit, is the level of detail that the environments are rendered in. So every location is like a famous city. And so you'll have like the National Mall or the Sydney Opera House or, you know, stuff like that. Which is cool, and it's you know, kind of fun to see their version of all these different things. But everything's rendered super detailed, so that, you know, the camera is fairly zoomed out and looking down. It could be a picture on like Google Maps, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's cool, but it makes it a little bit hard to know where you can and can't go sometimes.
Just because it's like way too detailed, like they don't actually like signpost the paths.
Well, for example, there's a park in the first level where you can like run through the park on the grass, but then the bottom right corner has a hedge that you would never notice unless you like stood still and really looked for it. But the hedge is there.
Oh, man.
Can't run across the hedge. So it's slightly remedied in that you can switch over to a thermal view, which not only shows you what buildings have people in them, but also shows you like more clearly laid out where you can and can't go. But just it's, you know, unless you're heavily relying on that, it's almost inscrutable. And while you have thermal vision on, you can't see the zombies. But if you turn it on, you'll see like there are buildings that look completely solid from the normal view that have a passageway in the middle of them that you would never know existed if you didn't get the thermal view. So, you know, in theory, it's like, okay, you've got a little bit of learning the map and like, hey, you can use thermal view to find these shortcuts. Like that's how it should work. In practice, it winds up with you just kind of relying as heavily as possible on thermal view and really being kind of annoyed every time you have to be out of it.
Right.
Which, you know, for them to have put so much effort into rendering these environments in detail is kind of a crime.
which is like, it's a little bit the Batman problem, right? Where you spend all your time in detective exactly. view, so you don't see any of the assets done. But exactly. like for them, it's also a crime against the player if they designed these environments to be so elaborate that it makes their game unplayable without doing that. Like there has to be like a happy medium that doesn't require you to use a different view mode.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, it's to the point where like you're running through a parking lot and like some cars you can run between and some cars you can't. And it's just because the actual when you look at the drawn out map, it is pretty, you know, clear cut lines for the most part. But the second you take that view off, it becomes inscrutable.
Wow. And so like looking at screenshots of this, like when you were initially describing this as Snake, I was thinking, oh, this is grid based. No, this is absolutely not grid based.
No, it's very freeform, although they do follow exactly your path. So if you draw a right. square with your guy, everyone will stay in a square.
Yeah.
Until the line obviously kind of traipses across that path. But yeah, I mean, overall it's been fun. Like I said, it's a good little arcade fix. And I had fun playing it.
Yeah. Huh. Well, yeah, that's I've had to fight my laziness with the PS Plus games because like nothing really speaks to me this month. And you know, they can't all be winners. Right.
Right.
But, I should at least like claim them.
Yeah, that's I have at least three times a month this like, oh shit, have I got my PlayStation Plus? And there's no reason they can't just have it. Like, I'm paying you guys. If I don't download it in that month, you should still give me access because I had PlayStation Plus in that month. Like, don't that it's so hostile that you have to actually go in and manually download them, or at least, yeah. you know, press the button on PlayStation Store. Like that's 5 minutes out of my day that you don't need to be taking. I'm giving you $50 a year or whatever for.
I kind of wonder if their terms of, if their publisher terms or their development agreement kind of thing means that like for every copy that is downloaded, at least claimed, like they have to pay the developer.
Gotcha.
You know, for each one of those that is clicked. As opposed to just like paying a blanket fee.
What's the name of this game again? Google the searches for zombie snake are too frightening.
Yeah. No, it is The Last Guy.
Okay.
The Last Guy. And this is like this is an old game. Like this is 2008. Are you playing this on your Vita? Are you playing it like what's the?
No, I think I don't know if it ever actually came to Vita.
No, it's so, PlayStation 3.
Yeah, PlayStation 3 is where I'm playing it.
Yeah.
Which that's, you know, given how detailed the environments are, I can't imagine trying to play it on Vita, on a Vita-sized screen.
Yeah. With as high res as it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bleh.
But it is kind of fun that your superhero status, it never gives you why you're special. It's just like you are our only hope and you've got a red cape. And
which means in this particular land, magicians are king.
Yeah. Well, what's also funny is like, you know, there are literally like 3,000 normal people on a map. And on a given map, there are maybe like 10 or 15 zombies. Mm-hmm. So the ones that are there, like you have to, you know, they kind of are a big presence. And you really have to work around them. But most of the time, there is nothing standing in the way of these normal people getting to the extraction zone. Like they do not need to be led. You can see it from here. And there are no zombies. Like the only zombies are on the other side of the map, strategically placed to make it hard to get a certain few. The majority of people could just kind of go on their own. So, initiative people, let's take some initiative.
Who's the real zombie, Dennis? Think about it.
Think about it.
And that's all I've played new. Played more League of Legends. I'm feeling like I'm starting to get my feet under me a little bit in that game. And obviously played more Hearthstone, which you can go check out the stream from this weekend, which was a ton of fun.
Yeah, you were dropping some science in that. Like, not even just like when you were explicitly teaching to it, but like the fact that you were talking through the rationale behind each of your moves and like projecting a couple of moves ahead each time you took an action was, it was pretty enlightening. I only got a chance to watch like a half hour of it because of family stuff. But yeah, you did a really good job at that.
It's one of those things where for Hearthstone, because it's not a real time game, it's very easy to make your internal monologue external, which I think, you know, there's been lots and lots of words spilled about why Hearthstone is such a streaming phenomenon. But yeah, it's really easy to kind of make that internal monologue audible to everyone. Yeah. Whereas a game like League of Legends, because it's all happening kind of Twitch based as well as kind of macro strategy based, I find myself just being silent a lot while playing it because I'm focusing on clicking in the right place as well as where I should be next.
Yeah, that, like, that's why you have like commentators or shoutcasters or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Huh. Yeah, I would encourage people to go take a look at that because I learned a thing or two about Dark Souls Hearthstone. Sorry, guys. I'm so excited about Dark Souls 3. Like, it's going to be so fun.
This is my ignorance. When is that actual release date?
That is coming out on April the 12th.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So here, we're less than 2 weeks away. We're exactly 2 weeks away. I'm sorry. Oh, nice. Man. Yeah. I still plan on doing an episode that week just because it's nice to have a break. Might not be a very long episode, but it'll be an episode.
You're going to hop on and start recording, and then you're just going to go off and play more Dark Souls 3 while we talk, and then you'll stop the recording when you...
No. Like,
good job, guys.
But seriously, by the time we start playing... by the time we get Dark Souls 3, by the time we start recording, I will have probably played about 10 hours of it in a single day. And it's like, yeah, I obviously need to go away from that. And so to stand up and record with you guys is the way I'd like to get that break and like step into being able to sleep that night. So... Huh.
I'm honored.
Yeah.
Do you already have work called off for that game?
Well, I have Cole's going to work from home. Yeah. Which means like Cole will respond if you message him on Slack. But you know, Cole will put out fires, but Cole will be very reluctant to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's the thing. They know that every year. They understand what I am, and for that I am very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that is about it. Do you guys want to button it up?
I think so.
That was level 144. David had to go sometime in the last section there. He has to go to work, but we're going to be here. And for everybody who is stuck around, we have a giveaway.
Yeah.
We didn't announce at the beginning because we didn't want those Johnny Come Latelys to get any of this.
Those Paul Come
Johnny Eve Latelys.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No. Those Paul Eve Earlys. we want a Paul Stay Lately to get this. So you remember back in, I believe it was December. Or, you know, a couple months ago, we had an interview with Kyle, the developer of To Ash. And in the meantime, that game has actually been released on Steam there. I believe it is either an early access game or available for people. It is $5 normally, but if you want to get a copy of this, we have a handful of them to give out. I'm going to keep this to Slack people because I want to incentivize those people who have given so generously. But if you go into Slack and type in, what phrase do we want them to say?
What was the episode name of that episode? Was Too Ash, Too Furious, right?
Yes.
So it's Too Ash for y'all.
What's that?
Too Ash for y'all.
I don't understand what you're saying.
It's the next line in the Too Fast, Too Furious song.
I don't know what is there a song?
Yeah.
Is there a House Party 2 for
Have you not seen the Paul Walker Tyrese vehicle, Too Fast, Too Furious?
No, I haven't.
No.
Fie on both of you.
No. let's see here. Say I'm so furious I need some ash. There we go.
Sounds
yep.
good.
Yep. Say that. I'll put in a search and we will reach out. We have a handful of those to give out, and it's probably Jolly who's going to be reaching out to you for that. But yeah.
Oh, and of note, yeah. So you know, in the meantime, not only has the game come out, but a significant amount of the art. Specifically, I think the character art in the game was done by our own Jala. So
yeah,
that's amazing, and just one more reason to love this game.
Yeah, so go check that out. Or remember the magic phrase is "I'm so furious and I need some ash." There we go. Okay. But we have all the normal stuff happening. Something I haven't talked about on here is the fact that selling some packs of postcards. You can get a random 4-pack of postcards by going to duckfeed.tv/store. Don't think of them as postcards. Think of them as 4x6 art prints. of some of our older backstock postcards that I desperately want to get into people's hands because I designed the majority of them and I'm proud of those designs. Yeah, but other than that, for this particular show, tell your friends and rate us, review us on iTunes if you haven't already, and all of that stuff. Is there anything that I'm forgetting?
No, that covers the big ones. We have a reviews like bot on the Slack channel, and every time I see that it's lit up with something new, I'm like,
oh, it's for WAF. Fuck.
Yeah. And yeah. Generally, they're very good reviews. So,
well, yeah.
But I would love to have a yay.
It's for us. Yeah. It good.
In case the listeners miss the Duck Spring, there's a bunch of videos that they can go check out on Twitch.
Oh yeah.
Yes, and also on I think it's like YouTube.com/DuckSpring. Z Chocobo has been uploading all of those.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hero for fighting the Twitch video system.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Impressive.
So angry. not at him, but at Twitch's video system. But yeah, go check all of those out. I want to underline all of that, like, hey, tell your friends and leave a review, because like Dark Souls 3 is about to come out, and like that is not just a huge time for Bonfireside Chat, that is a huge time for the network as a whole. Like every time a new Souls game comes out, we get a huge influx of new people. So all of you folks who are here right now, if you can help spread the word, not just about that show, but about the network in general, gosh, it's going to be so appreciated. We can move the needle on like everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for a title. Kind of a dry week this week. I have three. Does anybody have any they want to throw in?
I almost fell over.
Oh no.
I'm fine. I forgot to take notes this time, so my brain is empty. Although I heard some ones during that I was like, oh, that'd be good. And I always tell myself I'll remember and then I forget. So something might spark as you read the titles.
Okay. Ben?
I also do not have any.
Okay, so we have three to choose from. Articulate Stupidity. Piggyback. Magicians Are King.
Articulate Stupidity is my favorite of the three of those. The one I remembered is whatever it is, a Paul Leave Early with dashes. Paul dash leave dash early.
I worry that one works better in audio than text.
That's probably true. Okay, then my vote is with the Articulate Stupidity.
Okay, Ben, how about you?
Sorry to be so non. I don't know. I don't have an opinion. Okay. They're all fine.
They're all just fine. Yeah. So let's do Articulate Stupidity. There we go.
Can't have Sugar Bone every week.